Welcome to episode 126 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for May 28th, 2009. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, London's mayor has a near miss with a truck. Yes, another product recall, an update on the Étape du Caledonia, lots of updates in professional cycling, including the Giro d'Italia, boy gets in trouble for riding his bike to school on bike to work day, and the convicts Tour de France. Following the news, lots of features, including Bob Roll telling us about his favorite Giro d'Italia moments from his racing days, why it's called the Tour de France, and then we've got an update on the Davis Double Century. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast. Great to have you with us. Here's another spot from Graham Street, and he has a special offer just for Fredcast listeners, so listen up.
Hey, Fredcast listeners and fellow everyday cyclists. This is Graham Street, owner for cycleclub.com, and I got a special announcement for you today, so I want you to pay close attention. Would you like to get faster, 1 to 2 miles per hour faster in the next 7 days? Would you like to find out a way to do it in a quick, succinct way, with less work than you're doing right now on the bike? Would you like to find out secrets, techniques, and workouts you can use every ride to improve your speed for your favorite group rides, centuries, events, races? Most everyday cyclists want to get faster, but very few know how to do it. What most everyday cyclists do is they go out and they try to ride harder more often. And if you've done that age-old, antiquated, traditional tactic, you know it doesn't really work very well. There's a reason for it, and I want to teach you why. I want to show you how to get 1 to 2 miles per hour faster in the next 7 days. It can be done, my friend, regardless of why you ride. Ready to get faster? Here's what I want you to do. Go to thefredcast.com right now. There's a big ad at the top, a banner ad to get faster in 7 days. I'm going to give you all the techniques, all the workouts, all the secrets, everything you need to ride 1 to 2 miles per hour faster in 7 days for $10.95. I only have a limited amount of these modules available. Get over to the Fredcast right now. 1 to 2 miles per hour faster in 7 days. I'll see you over at the club.
This is a great limited time offer from Graham Street and Cyclo Club. Get over to www.thefredcast.com, and I've got a link there on the show notes and also on the right-hand column of the page. Get 1 to 2 miles per hour faster today. Go to www.thefredcast.com, and we thank Cyclo Club for their support. First up in the news this week is a video that appeared over the weekend online showing London Mayor Boris Johnson. He was out for a ride with a number of other transport officials looking at sites for possible bike lanes in and around London. What the video shows was captured by a closed circuit TV camera in London, and it shows the mayor and his compatriots coming around a corner on a very quiet street, number of cars parked along the side of the road. They cycle past, and just as they come past, what looks to be a garbage truck comes around the corner quite fast. The rear doors swing open as it comes around the corner, hooking the front of a car and dragging that car along with it, nearly injuring, perhaps possibly with the potential of killing Mr. Johnson and his compatriots. The truck driver does stop and surveys the damage, and so does the London mayor. And you can see him standing there with his helmet, scratching his head, surveying the damage. Very scary. I've got a link in the show notes and also on the website. Go check it out. Next up, I've got not necessarily a product recall, but what's called a product defect notice. And this is coming from Schwalbe, the tire manufacturer. And they're warning that certain Schwalbe Ultremo R tires might have some issues. Specifically, they say that some of these tires have been supplied into the market and they could suffer a failure due to a mistake that occurred in the manufacturing process. Basically, the outer wall of the tire might not have been sufficiently rubberized, and as a result, you might find some bulging that could cause the tire to fail. And the fault becomes clearly visible when they're is a bulge in the outer layer of the tire. In no case, they say, should Ultramo R tires that exhibit this phenomenon, none of them should be used, and they should be replaced immediately. They say that the danger is that if you don't replace those tires, as the outer layer of the tire bulges, it could chafe through, causing the inner tube to burst. And then, of course, you can imagine that that could cause those who have this problem to fall off their bike. They say that if you have an affected Ultramo R tire, they apologize for the inconvenience and they will replace it. You simply send a photo of the Ultramo R showing the defect, as well as a photo of the production code that is found on the inside of the tire, to a special email address, and they will send you a replacement. You can find more information in the show notes, where you will find not only a link to the defect notice on the Schwalbe website, but also to an Adobe PDF document that will describe the defect to you. So go check out your bike if you've got Ultramo R tires from Schwalbe. Well, you'll recall that we recently talked about the event in the UK called the Étape du Caledonia, where apparently someone put carpet tacks all over the closed roads and caused over 500 punctures of participants in the event. Well, last week, a county council chairman and also a church elder appeared in court in connection with this crime. Alex Grosset, aged 62, from Bridge of Gar, was charged with culpably and recklessly placing carpet tacks on the road, causing hundreds of cyclists to suffer punctures during the Étape du Caledonia. According to reports that I've read online, there were a number of community members, non-cyclists, who were upset that the roads were closed for this event. About 3,500 cyclists participate, and it is the only event in Britain in which all of the roads on which the bikes travel are closed. Despite this incident, the organizers have said that they will have the event again next year, and this year's event raised more than £200,000 for the Macmillan Cancer Support. So this will happen again, and hopefully Mr. Grosset will get some punishment for this crime. We've been talking a lot lately on the show about new laws that concern bicycles around the United States, and now there's a new law that has been sent to Governor John Baldacci in Maine for his signature. This bill was given final Senate approval last week and has now been sent to the governor's desk, and it would mean that Maine cyclists would have to observe the same law as drivers when it comes to passing stopped school buses. We've all seen the backs of school buses, and they're painted, and they say, "Stop when red lights flash." Traditionally, bicyclists have not stopped for those yellow lights, posing a potential danger to the school children as they are getting out of the bus and perhaps crossing the street. Now, bicyclists would be prohibited from passing or overtaking a stopped school bus that has its red lights flashing. Looks like the governor is going to sign this. So for those of you in Maine, and actually it's probably pretty good policy for those of you anywhere here in the United States or elsewhere, if you see those red lights flashing and you're on your bike, probably a good idea just to stop and wait and allow those kids to get safely across the road before you overtake them, whether it's in your car or on your bicycle. Well, from school buses, it's time to transfer to professional cycling news, and specifically to the Giro d'Italia. We have now had 18 stages of the Giro d'Italia, and there have been a number of changes in the general classification. Sitting in top place, wearing the Maglia Rosa or the pink jersey, after 76 hours, 36 minutes, and 5 seconds on the bike, from Russia and Team Rabobank, it's Denis Menchov. In second place, former Maglia Rosa wearer, and he's hoping to be future and final Maglia Rosa wearer, it's Danilo Di Luca from Italy and Team LPR. He's 26 seconds back of Denis Menchov. In third place, Franco Pellizzotti from Italy in Team Liquigas, 2 minutes back. In fourth, Ivan Bazzo from Team Liquigas, also from Italy, 3 minutes, 28 seconds back. In fifth, Carlos Sastre from Spain in Team Cervelo Test at 3 minutes, 30 seconds back. And America's hope for a win this year at the Giro d'Italia, not looking good at the moment. In sixth place, it's Levi Leipheimer from Team Astana, 4 minutes, 32 seconds back. In seventh place, Michael Rogers from Australia and Team Colombia at 7 minutes, 5 seconds back. In eighth, Stefano Garzelli from Italy and the Acqua e Sapone team at 8 minutes, 3 seconds back. In ninth, Tadej Valjevic from Slovenia and AG2R, 9 minutes, 58 seconds back. And rounding out our top 10, it's Marzio Brusagan from Italy and Team Lampre at 10 minutes, 33 seconds behind our race leader, Denis Menchov. I have to say the last few days have been very topsy-turvy. We'll get into a little bit of that. But first, I really want to say that I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised, I suppose, by the performance of one Lance Armstrong from the United States and Team Astana. Lance is sitting in 12th place in the general classification. He's 12 minutes, 17 seconds back. And honestly, were he not working in this race for Levi Leipheimer, had he not had to step back, actually soft pedal to help Levi a few stages ago, I think Lance would probably be placed much higher in the general classification, perhaps in the top five or six instead of Levi. Lance is looking to be in amazing shape. And it looks to me like he's going to be very well positioned for the Tour de France. So chapeau to Lance Armstrong. He looks amazing. After 4 years out of the professional peloton, he really is having a phenomenal Giro d'Italia. Today's stage was won by Michele Scarpone, the second of his stage victories for this year's Giro d'Italia. He's from the Di Qui Giovanni squad. Also included in the final break was Jason McCartney and Danny Pate from the United States. I have to tell you, in looking at the final sprint, it is obvious how fatigued these racers are after almost 3 weeks of racing. Nevertheless, to watch this bike racing has been phenomenal. It's been a great Giro d'Italia. And it included a hat trick for one Mark Cavendish. Cavendish winning three stages in this year's Giro d'Italia before pulling out of the race to prepare for the Tour de France. So congratulations to Cavendish. Really an amazing feat for him. Literally the fastest man in the world. We've also seen the real definition of teamwork and what it means to be a domestique or a lieutenant in a Giro d'Italia squad. In stage 15, there was a two-man break consisting of Leonardo Bertagnoli and Serge Pauwels from the Cervelo Test Team. Pauwels was looking like he had the opportunity to potentially win the 15th stage, but he got team orders and was told to soft pedal and allow himself to fall behind in order to assist his teammate and team leader, Carlos Sastre. There was a lot of discussion going back and forth on Twitter and on blogs and all over the internet about whether or not Pauwels should have soft pedaled and why he did it. And the Cervelo Test Team was very clear on their website about why this happened. The fact of the matter is, when you're a lieutenant, it is not your job to win stages unless your team manager, your director sportif, tells you that you can win the stage. If you've got a team leader that is behind you, in this case, a top cyclist like Carlos Sastre, and he potentially needs your help, forget winning the stage. You need to soft pedal, slow down, and go back and help your team leader. So that was yet another thing that we saw in this year's Giro so far. Real representation of what it means to be a team member on a Giro d'Italia squad. Another thing we've seen in this year's Giro d'Italia is that sometimes even race favorites can have a bad day. It's happened to Levi Leipheimer on stage 16, the so-called queen stage of this year's Giro d'Italia. Typically, the queen stage is the longest, hardest stage of any stage race. This stage was long and difficult at 223.7 kilometers and nearly 7,000 meters of vertical climbing. It was extremely difficult. And as Levi said at the end of the race, Lance had to wait for me today. Lance having to come back and help Levi Leipheimer finish this stage and trying to keep him from losing as little time as possible in the stage. Prior to stage 16, Levi was sitting in the general classification at 43 seconds behind then race leader Denis Menchov from Rabobank. At the end of the Queen stage, at the end of stage 16, Levi had dropped back to 3 minutes 21 seconds behind Menchov. So what you definitely have seen here is that even sometimes race favorites can have bad days, and those bad days can ruin your chances potentially in a multiple-day, multiple-week stage race. And finally, another thing that we've seen at this year's Giro d'Italia is the effect that social media has had on the media reporting, the conventional media reporting of the event. You'll recall, let's go back to that circuit race in Milan last weekend and the rider protest that ensued and all of that trash talk that was going back and forth in the press about, well, specifically one man, Lance Armstrong. And Lance has been using social media throughout this event, and certainly before this event. He uses video blogs on his website, and he certainly uses the social media website Twitter quite often. Now, prior to this protest of Lance's and then Lance's subsequent refusal to talk directly to the press as a result of having been raked over the coals because of the protest, Lance is continuing to talk on Twitter, but the media has decided to boycott reporting on Lance's Twitter comments as they were doing beforehand simply because of his refusal to talk directly to them in the press. As Byron from Bike Hugger pointed out on the Spokesman Roundtable podcast last weekend, does it really matter? Lance is creating his own media, doing his own reporting, and it may be that the mainstream press, the traditional media, is going to have to adapt, and maybe these boycotts really don't result in anything other than people realizing that perhaps social media is beginning to bypass traditional media. It's been very interesting to watch how this has occurred, even as the riders on their rest day earlier in the week were challenging each other to swimming races via Twitter. So very interesting to follow the social media while we're also following the traditional media. You'll also recall that we've been talking frequently about the financial woes of Lance and Levi's team Astana and the fact that the Astana team has been riding the Giro d'Italia for the past few days with jerseys that show the logos severely screened back and faded in protest over the financial woes of the team. Well, according to the Associated Press, the Astana team has received some of the back pay that has been owed by the sponsors. Last Wednesday, Johan Bernil told the Associated Press, quote, "It's not complete yet, but it's moving." Nevertheless, the Astana team has until May 31st, and that's the deadline imposed by the UCI, before the UCI makes a decision as to whether or not to pull Astana's UCI license. That date is just a couple of days from now. We will have an update on that situation on the next episode of the Fredcast. Meanwhile, while all this racing has been going on in Italy, there was another little race in Spain from May 18th through the 24th. It was the Volta a Catalunya. Interesting to find out who won this race. Alejandro Valverde of Spain. And as you may recall, Valverde is currently serving a 2-year suspension from competing in Italy, and therefore he was able to take the overall general classification in that stage race in Spain. Second place going to Daniel Martin of Ireland, 15 seconds back of Valverde, and third place going to Jaimar Zubeldia from Spain, 22 seconds behind Valverde. After the race, Valverde was asked about missing the Giro d'Italia and instead taking part in the Volta a Catalunya, and he said, quote, "I hope that very soon all this injustice will be over and I will be able to concentrate on riding without having to think about other matters." Another rider who's had his share of doping issues lately is Tom Bonin. Bonin being fined and temporarily suspended by his Quickstep team as a result of a second positive doping test for cocaine will be returning to racing for Quickstep at a local race on June the 2nd before heading to the Dauphiné Libéré, which is normally a preparation for a lot of riders for July's Tour de France. Meanwhile, Pat McQuaid from the UCI says that it looks like Bonin would be allowed to race in this year's Tour de France. According to Pat McQuaid, talking to Belgium's De Standard newspaper, he was quoted as saying, quote, "There is no reason to ban Tom Bonin from the Tour. From the point of view of sporting regulations, nothing can stop Bonin. He has committed no fault in his capacity as a rider." Continuing, "As UCI president, I think he's harmed the image of the sport. That I cannot accept. It's for that reason that the affair has been brought before the UCI's disciplinary committee. Bonin will have to defend himself there, but it could last several weeks." So it looks like Tom Bonin does have the opportunity potentially of racing in this year's Tour de France. Of course, we've still got a little bit more than a month to go before the tour begins. We'll see whether or not he is on the starting line this year. And yes, another rider disgraced by doping is Austrian cyclist Bernhard Kohl. Kohl, having finished third in the Tour de France and winning the polka dot jersey as the best climber or the king of the mountains in the Tour de France, admitted to using CERA, the banned blood booster, at last year's Tour de France, and then he was banned for 2 years by Austria's National Anti-Doping Agency. In a statement on his website, Bernhard Kohl announced his retirement from professional cycling, saying that he wanted to, quote, "stop living a double life based on lies." But then he went on to say something that was very interesting and something I've heard a lot of you say before. He said, quote, "The clean sports hero we wish for is often just fiction. Somewhere along the way, talent, training, and tough discipline just aren't enough anymore." So Bernhard Kohl, having been a rising star in professional cycling, is now on the sidelines permanently. Sad story to tell you about, and this one has to do with the death of a cyclist, and this could have been completely avoided. This happened in South Gloucester last year on July the 8th, when Jonathan Atkinson agreed to allow his friend Mark Hollister hang on to the back of his car while Hollister was riding his bike. The problem was Hollister had had 4 cans of hard cider and smoked marijuana. And somewhere during the ride, he fell off his mountain bike and suffered multiple head injuries. Now, Atkinson, the driver, initially called paramedics, but when he did, he lied to police about the details of the accident, saying that, well, he was just a bystander who saw the accident happen and he stopped to help the man who fell off his bike. Then he fled the scene. About a month later, he admitted his part in this tragedy under questioning, and last week he was jailed for 3 years after he admitted causing death by, quote, "dangerous driving and perverting the course of justice." In addition to the 3 years in jail, he was also disqualified from driving for 3.5 years. The sentencing judge, Mark Horton, told the defendant, quote, "There was a gap of a month in which you chose to tell a determined tissue of barefaced lies. One of the additional and greatest hardships on a grieving family is not to know how and why a death has occurred. It was a dangerous maneuver and an act of great and highly culpable stupidity. Undoubtedly, the deceased accepted and took the risk and did so knowing that he was under the influence of drink and cannabis. I'm quite certain that you will carry the pain of your responsibility to your grave together with the shame you must feel for your cowardice." Now, you know, I've seen kids do this. I've never seen adults participate in such dangerous behavior, but let this be a reminder of several things. One, of course, the danger of drugs and drinking when you're on your bike and when you're driving, and two, the fact that doing something like this, or a stupid maneuver, as the judge called it, is simply uncalled for and something you should never do. I'd like to have you listening for a long period of time, so please be smart when you're out there on your bike. Speaking of silly stories, here's one from Saratoga Springs, New York. And this one, well, this one boggles the imagination. As many of us were riding our bikes to work on Bike to Work Day, Jeanette Cato Marino and her son Adam, 12 years old, from Saratoga Springs, New York, they also wanted to participate in Bike to Work Day, but instead, Adam wanted to ride his bike to school. So he and his mom set off on the 7-mile ride, and when they arrived at school, together, mind you, with the mother escorting the son to school by bike, when they arrived, they were approached by school security and then by school administrators, who informed them that students are not allowed to ride their bikes to school. They took the boy's bike, stored it in a boiler room, and told the mom she was going to have to return by car in order to retrieve her son's bike. According to the school's principal, the reason for the policy is one of safety. He said, quote, "I'd be a nervous wreck every day if kids were riding to school. Traffic isn't bumper to bumper, but it's nonstop." Now, as a parent, I can certainly understand the principal's reticence to allow kids to ride their bikes to school by themselves. However, in this case, this was a family that was experienced cyclists, matter of fact, taking cycling vacations together, and here was a 12-year-old young man who was riding to school escorted by his mom. She was quoted as saying, "I did feel like my rights as a parent were being jeopardized or questioned. Other parents drive their kids to school, so I should be able to ride my child to school." Interestingly, some of you may have heard of a program nationwide called Safe Routes to School, which awards grant funding to school districts looking to improve pedestrian and bicycle access to schools. And the New York State Department of Transportation manages such a program. Last year, the DOT in New York awarded $2 million in grant funds for transportation projects through the Safe Routes program, and any school district can apply. This school district was encouraged to apply, but according to a DOT spokesperson, quote, "I was told that the school board policy considered it unsafe to walk or bike, and the policy is only to bus kids to and from school." I have a feeling that based on the media coverage that this has received, that next year the Saratoga Springs School District might consider applying for some of those Safe Routes funds. And for those of you who are looking for a little bit of entertainment in cycling in France in June instead of in July, well, here's a race that you might consider watching. This is the Convicts Tour de France. This will take place from June the 4th and go 2,300 kilometers or 1,400 miles around the country, stopping in 17 towns, each of which, coincidentally, has a prison. Here's the way it's going to work. 196 prisoners are going to ride in a pack around France. And by the way, sprint points or breakaways will not be allowed. They're going to be accompanied by 124 guards and prison sports instructors. The idea here is to foster values like teamwork and effort. According to Daniel, a 48-year-old prisoner in the western city of Nantes, at the official launch of the event, he said, quote, "It's a kind of escape for us." Yeah, you think? "A chance to break away from the daily reality of prison. If we behave well, we might be able to get released earlier on probation." According to Sylvie Marion from the prison authority, quote, "This project aims to help these men reintegrate into society by fostering values like effort, teamwork, and self-esteem. We want to show them that with some training, you can achieve your goals and start a new life." My question is, what is their kit going to look like? Orange or striped? Or perhaps both? Should be interesting. I'm looking forward to see some pictures of this event when it begins next week. And with that arresting story, this will be the end of the news for the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for this week. Before we get to the features this week, I just want to remind you about our upcoming trip to the French Alps, this taking place September 5th through the 12th. There are links in the show notes and also on our website. Just go to www.thefredcast.com and click that travel link at the top of the page. You will go to the Viva Travels website where you'll get all the information you're looking for on our Chasseur de Col trip. The time to sign up is now. If you've been wavering, if you're on the fence, we need you to sign up right away so that we can make sure that we have all of the spots filled and that we have your space ready for you. This is going to be the trip of a lifetime, the chance to ride some of the most famous cols, some of the most famous climbs in the Tour de France, and this is beautiful country and a great place to ride. We're going to be staying in some great hotels, having some great meals, and yes, we will be riding some of the most famous cols, some of my favorites, the Col de Madeleine, the Col du Galibier, and of course, the most famous of Tour de France climbs of them all, the Alpe d'Huez. Again, this takes place September 5th through the 12th, 2009. Please get your signups in now. There are links in the show notes on the website and in the Enhanced podcast. I'm really looking forward to riding with you in France this September. Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to record another episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. Now, I know that some of you do listen to the Spokesman, but that many of you don't. And we had a special guest, and hopefully he will be a frequent contributor to the Spokesman, and that was none other than Bob Roll. Bob, a former professional cyclist and now a professional commentator for the Versus TV network here in the United States, and extremely well known for both of those activities. Bob joined us for the whole show commenting on a variety of topics that we discussed, but we specifically talked about two that I wanted to bring here to the Fredcast so that you could get a little bit of Bob's perspective. The first thing you're going to hear is Bob talking to me and the other members of the Spokesman, including Donna Tosi, Rich Kelly, D.L. Byron from Bike Hugger. We asked Bob about his memories of racing in the Giro d'Italia. Here's what he had to say about that. And then following that, I asked Bob about his special pronunciation of that race that occurs in July. Go ahead and take a listen to this, and then if you like it, go to iTunes and subscribe to the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. We do it about every 2 weeks, and we talk about a wide variety of topics, some of which we don't often talk about here on the Fredcast, but I do think you'll find it interesting. You can find that at www.the-spokesman.com. Here's what Bob Roll had to say about his memories of the Giro d'Italia.
The Giro will never be the Tour, but it's a glorious event, and the scenery is spectacular. The racing is very hard, very technical, and it's a grand tour. I mean, honestly, it's my favorite of all the races to cover. You know, you get the good food and the fantastic scenery and the sort of baffling Italian predisposition to chaos is also a big part of the Giro that. Right. You don't have in any other race. I love the Giro, and I think the more people that are exposed to it, the more popular it will become. But it's been a tough battle for the organizers because they've always sort of preferred a lot of small Italian teams, Italian stars, and they haven't really tried to promote it as a big international race the way the Tour has. And maybe the calendar only has one room for one big grand tour that everybody pays attention to, and that happens to come in July in France. But I'm hoping the Giro continues to become more popular.
So, Bob, you mentioned that you love covering the Giro, and it's your favorite one, but I know that you also rode it, and can you give us your favorite Giro memory as a rider?
Oh, gosh. When we won was pretty fun. In 1988, Andy won the Giro, and Andy Hampson, and he remains the only American to have done so. I think when it was a lot of hard work, and I felt like the whole Italian peloton was racing against us a lot of the time, and finally prevailed at the end. And I can remember sitting in the hotel with my teammates as Andy did the last time trial of the race, and we got to watch it on TV. And it was just a really fantastic moment, all of us, you know, the remaining six guys watching Andy do the final time trial and putting on the final pink jersey of the race was really very special. That was probably the best we ever did, the hardest race we had, with the most at stake, and all of the guys on the team really rising up to the occasion to actually deliver the win. So that was probably my best memory of the race.
Did you get to ride that famous Snowy Gavia Pass stage?
Did I ride that?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We made, that was probably the worst memory of the Giro. It happened just a week before the best memory. But yeah, I don't think they would ever permit the riders to go through that, and they have, because of how traumatic that was, racing through a snowstorm for many hours through the mountains. A lot of guys had hypothermia, myself included, at the finish. A lot of the Italian guys drove down the hill in cars, everybody suffered on that, like beasts, like really. I mean, you can imagine in a T-shirt and shorts basically riding through, a foot of snow on the top of the pass, and it just being hammered, freezing rain in the valley, in the valleys between the mountain climbs, and then snow on top of the mountains. It was, and for an hour, that's fine, but for 200 plus kilometers, it was really, really murderous. And I don't think they've allowed the riders to go through that. If we stopped at the top of the Gavia Pass, it wouldn't have been nearly as traumatic. But it was a 38-kilometer descent into Bormio from the top that was treacherous, covered in snow, and an hour of descending when you're already frozen to the core. It was ill-advised, but it provided for a spectacular race. And it was a part of the Giro legend that will never be eclipsed by any other race. They just don't allow that anymore. And the guys that survived that, whenever I see them, we always talk about the Gavia stage every single time. Even if you've talked about it 10 times before with the same guy, we always mention it again.
And then you'll recall we were talking on the Fredcast recently about the pronunciation of that race in July. And I noticed that Bob was using, he was saying Tour de France on the spokesman, and I wanted to know why it was that he was saying that instead of what he's more famous for saying.
Hey, Bob, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So on the show, on your Versus show, I think it's pretty clear that everybody knows you for the way that you uniquely pronounce the name of that certain race in July, but you've pronounced it differently here on this show. Enlighten me.
Well, I got, when we raced, it's funny, the French, they only need one word. It's the only language where you only need one word. It's no. That's the only French word that the French need. So everything you say is no. It's like, so I'm like, well, forget it then. I tried to say the name of the event right, but it didn't work. So for about 23 years, I just said Tour de France just to really irritate them, because they know you're from the United States. And so no matter how perfectly you speak the language, they will mock you. And in those days, I was way more volatile than the highly evolved individual you see. And so I thought, oh man, that's it. It's on. So after the tour in 2005, I was standing on the Champs-Élysées with the race director, Jean-Marie LeBlanc, and we were speaking French to each other, and a group of about 1,000 American cyclists pulled up, and they started chanting Tour de France, and I thought I had, my revenge was complete at that point. And so last year I decided that I had said that word enough times, so I went back to saying it properly, and almost nobody noticed that I had done that. So it's funny. For me, it was sort of an exercise in mass media training, and the way I said it was so grating to a lot of people that we got incredible amounts of criticism for it over the emails, the letters to the editor, as it were, for the network. And when I stopped saying it, nobody noticed. For me, it was a sort of a strange big brother Orwellian exercise in media relations between the between what you hear and what's true. It was interesting, but I didn't do it because I wanted to do an experiment. It was just the social anthropological ramifications of changing a tiny little pronunciation. It was really entertaining.
Well, for me.
I don't know about anybody else.
No, I think everybody was entertained by it. So thank you for the explanation.
Well, I hope you enjoyed both of those clips. So when I heard them on The Spokesman when it was happening, I thought, this is something I've got to bring to the Fredcast listeners. So hopefully you enjoyed that. And if you did, go ahead and check out The Spokesman podcast, www.the-spokesman.com. Well, next up, for those of you in the Portland, Oregon area, I wanted to tell you about an upcoming event that's happening on June 13th in North Portland. This is the Cirque du Cycling Criterium presented by Laughing Planet Cafe, and this is part of a full afternoon of cycling activities, including a family ride, live music entertainment, and an art bike parade, and a beer garden, and exhibitors. This is a unique race course because it includes two-way racing along Mississippi Avenue. While most race courses are not designed like this, this is great for spectators because it's going to be able to allow you to watch the cyclists as they go each way along Mississippi Avenue. According to Jim Anderson, Cirque du Cycling Criterium race director, quote, "Bicycle racing in an urban area in Portland is a rare treat, and to add to it that it is in a bustling and energetic destination neighborhood like Mississippi Avenue is even better. After the overwhelming success of our first year, racers are looking forward to coming back to the race at this unique event in a fantastic community and neighborhood. This is an event that racers talk about year round. Again, it's June 13th, 2009. It takes place in North Portland, Oregon. I've got links in the show notes and also in the Enhanced podcast. If you're in the area, go ahead and check it out. It sounds like it's going to be a great event. One of the things we talk about here on the show a lot is things like preparing for centuries, and we talk about double centuries. Well, one of our listeners, listener Curtis, recently participated in the Davis Double Century in Davis, California. This was on Saturday, May 16th, 2009. This was the 40th annual Davis Double Century. This put on by the Davis Bike Club at davisbikeclub.org. Curtis sent in a report of his participation in the Davis Double. So here is listener Curtis and his report of the 2009 Davis Double Century.
Hi, my name's Curtis, and I'm a Fred too. The Fredcast has run some ride reports on centuries and on some fundraising rides, but what about those longer rides? I asked David if I could do a report on the Davis Double, a 200-mile ride that starts in Davis, California. The Davis Double Century is an institution in Northern California. This year is its 40th annual running. I remember being very young and hearing about it and thinking, who can do that? Is that even possible? They must be pros. But of course they're not. It's really Freds like you and I that go out and ride 200 miles in one day. When I tell people about double centuries, one of their first questions is, why? So I went around the evening dinner and the next morning before the ride and asked people,
why on earth are you going to try to ride 200 miles tomorrow?
Because it's fun. Feels good when you stop.
It does feel good when you stop, but it's also fun. It's addictive.
What's the fun part?
To say that you rode 200 miles in one day and watch people's eyes bug out of their head when you tell them.
Wouldn't it be easier just to lie about it?
Not for me.
Right. He wouldn't have the tan lines.
What?
He wouldn't have the tan lines.
And that's important.
Well, to some people.
Perhaps a little more seriously.
Because it's there's something spiritual about it.
And even though it's not a race, someone has to quote you know who.
Well, I can quote Lance Armstrong. He says it's all about the pain. It's a pain so intense that it's cleansing.
Wouldn't it be easier to just stay home and hit yourself in the head with a hammer?
Anybody can do that.
And, of course, the classic answer.
Why do men climb mountains?
Okay, you answer that too.
Because it's there.
And it went pretty much further downhill from there. But I realized that I hadn't answered that question for myself. So I tread on a whole bunch of different answers to see how they fit, and I discovered that most of my answers were equally flip or trite or just wrong if I examined them. My favorite one was that I'd done this ride last year, and I discovered they only do a jersey every 5 years. So this was a jersey year, so I was doing it just to get the jersey. But honestly, that's not really a reason to do a ride. But we can come back to all that philosophical stuff later. Let's talk about the actual ride. We started at 4 in the morning. The official starts 5:30, but they'll let you start early if you have lights and tail lights, which we did. So we headed out through the very flat Central Valley. And it's really kind of fun to ride at night with a group. There's nobody out. You can go, well, it feels like you're going really fast even if you're not, because it's so dark. And the first part of this ride is almost just to get you to, I think, the interesting part. Our first real climb was up to Lake Berryessa, up a hill, what they call the Dam Hill for obvious reasons. And then after that, a hill they call Cardiac Hill, which is really overstating it. It's not all that steep. It's just a long little grunt. And then we drop down.
Okay, I'm at 98 miles. Thank goodness it's not 100 billion degrees like it was last year. It's starting to get warm, but it's still comfortable. So I've gone 97 miles at 4,100 feet of climbing, which is about half the climbing. Unfortunately, right in front of me is Cobb Mountain, which is the one thing I'm worried about. It's a mountain where when it drops back to 10% grade, you're kind of happy for the ease up.
Wow, I was pretty thrilled to make it to the top, and I wasn't the only one that was thrilled.
How you doing?
I'm happy that it's a past tense, that hill now. Yeah, happy to be done.
You know, how was that hill?
Oh, dear God. That was awful. Every bit as gross and disgusting as I was afraid it might be.
And, of course, there are people with alternate visions.
Oh, it's just a pimple.
Just a pimple.
Yeah. I really, really wasn't planning on stopping here, but I felt like if the volunteers came out, I should stop and show them that I appreciate the help.
Like all uphills, this one was followed by a downhill, which was a wonderful, just screaming 40-mile-an-hour, endless downhill on reasonably good roads. It was just a blast where we rolled along and eventually got to lunch. At lunch, things were starting to heat up a little bit, and the Davis Bike Club had provided what may be the all-time great cycling invention, ice socks. They've taken tube socks and filled them full of ice because the temperatures are getting to be around 100 by now. So you take this ice sock and you wrap it around your neck, and you can either ride with it or you can just put it on your head for a while.
It's the blessed ice sock. I worship the ice sock.
Saved my life.
I think a lot of people felt like that. These things can really cool you off when you're dying. I just think every bike ride that happens where it's hot needs to have a huge collection of ice socks for everybody. Because this ride was starting to heat up. Even though it wasn't as hot as last year, temperatures are starting to be around 100 degrees, and we have one more big climb in front of us.
Oh, I'm at the bottom of what they call Resurrection Hill. I'm at 132 miles. It's about 5 miles, I think, to a rest stop where I will rest. Get some more water because I'm getting mighty low. And then it'll be 60 miles home, and I know I can do 60 miles. So the big challenge of the day is, can I do 5? I'm hoping, because it's getting old.
I'd miscalculated a little bit, which was a fortunate thing. It was actually a little farther, but I kept thinking, the rest stop's around the next corner. The temperature was up to, depending on who you listen to, 104 or 110, and it was just exhausting. When I got to the rest stop, there were a number of people in the first aid tent, people being sagged in. I heard they were having trouble sagging all the people that weren't making it. This might be a good time to talk about some of the strategies for surviving the heat. One of the big ones is, of course, we all know this, more water and more water. I got through on Hammer products. I drank Heed and Perpetuum the whole time. And this year, because it was so hot, rather than just fill my water bottles at the rest stops, I would stop and drink a bottle of water and then fill them up and go. So I didn't get thirsty or run out of water. And the fact that I was constantly drinking and having caloric intake and wearing an ice sock, I think really helped me get through where a lot of other people that are actually stronger and faster riders didn't make it. From mile 140, it's downhill, it's 60 miles back, and 60 miles isn't very far unless it's really hot and you've already ridden 140, but nonetheless, it was a welcome change and a relatively easy ride from there. It was, again, downhill, and then eventually we got to the flats. There were some rather frightening sections of roadway where there's really no room for you to be. I'm always amazed on group rides how people can be complete idiots and ride two abreast or hang out into an incredibly busy road. So if you're doing that, cut it out right now. All right, enough of that. We eventually got to the rest stop at mile 180 and talked to some of the people that were staffing it, which was a delight. I should mention that the Davis Bike Club does a great job with this. They've got people on the roads. The people at the rest stops are so nice and so helpful and really concerned about the riders. So anyway, we were at mile 180, and we thought we'd ask them if anything fun had happened that we'd missed.
We had one of our tandem riders actually lay down in the swimming pool.
Oh, that's right.
And then she stuffed a block of ice down her shirt and took off. We're offering pickles here.
Yeah.
Would you like a pickle?
No, thanks. You had, what did you have to do?
Well, I just had a gentleman kind of take me up on my offer a little bit on the pickle issue. Ah. I had to decline. Respectfully.
After mile 180 and he's making pickle jokes?
He's making pickle jokes, you know? That or bad pickup lines, I don't know.
Yes.
I pretty much would have to think that it's all talk at this point.
I think so.
Strangely enough, this is not the last rest stop. My colleagues I was riding with demanded that we stop at the last rest stop, which is a fire station, where they serve chili.
Many years ago, there was a fireman who made chili one year for the bike race, and it became a tradition, and every year since.
So we serve chili here, you serve chili here,
yes.
And it's really good.
Yes, it is. It's a special secret formula.
And then we have to ride 4 miles.
Seven and a half.
And so as the sun went down, we hopped back on our bikes and rode 7.5 miles so that we could say that we'd actually finished the Davis Double.
May we please check you in, please?
Yes,
please?
You can. Here's my number.
What's your number? 223. You must be C. Corlew.
I am.
And we were back. I asked people about their ride and what it was like.
A little too hot.
Hot? Is that a good thing?
No, it's not a good thing.
How's my ride? Hot.
The ride was hot. It was cooked. I was cooked. It was boiling. It was fried. It was roasted.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was great fun.
What's amazing is that this double century, with about 8,000 plus feet of climbing, is considered an easy double century. Maybe it was the heat that made it so hard this year. What's more amazing to me is that I'm finding myself already thinking about doing another one. And I'm still not exactly sure why. But I've been thinking about it a lot, and here's my working theory. It's important to have something that matters this much that just really doesn't matter. I mean, if you make it, you don't get more money, you don't get a new bike. If you don't make it, your life doesn't change. It's just good to have something that you care about this much that really doesn't matter. Let me just end this with a little advice. If you're contemplating doing a double century, or even a century, you would do well to dig into iTunes and find episodes 5 and 7 of the Fredcast. They're both just full of lots of practical advice on what you can do, not only in training, but to get your bike and yourself ready and get organized for that big first century. I found them really helpful, and I bet you will too.
Hey, Curtis, thanks so much for that really fantastic report, and thanks also for the plug for the episodes 5 and 7 of the Fredcast, where I talk about how to prepare for your first century. I appreciate that as well, and I'm guessing either you live in an aviary or you have a bird, so it was great not only to hear you, but to hear your bird reporting on the Davis Double as well. Listen, those of you who are regular listeners to the Fredcast, you know I love to get your input on the show and have you participate in the show. This really is a community. So if you are out there and you're participating in a ride and you'd like to do what Curtis did and send in a report, that would be fantastic. Go ahead and send me an MP3 or an AAC or a WAV file, and I'll be happy to put your ride report on the show. Once again, Curtis, thanks so much for that report. It was fantastic. And for those of you who are interested, if you go to the show notes, I have put a link to Curtis's personal blog where you can read a little bit more of his thoughts. So thanks again, Curtis. Great report on the Davis Double Century. Now, before we go, there's one other thing that I wanted to mention to you, and this is a new website that I really like. It's called bikewise.org. And of course, I've got links in the show notes and in the Enhanced podcast, as always. And this is run by the Cascade Bicycle Club in partnership with sustainability activist and software developer Phil Mitchell. They're based in Seattle, Washington, but the point of the website is that it should be useful for people across the country and indeed perhaps across the world. This is, we've talked about this here on the show before, it's a Google Maps mashup, and it is a way for you to report crashes, road hazards, and bicycle thefts so that others in your area can learn. So for instance, let's say there's large potholes in a particular area. You can go on to Bikewise and you can report those, and then other cyclists who are going to be going down that same route will be forewarned about those hazards. Or perhaps there's one corner in town where there's a lot of crashes that occur and you want to let your other cyclists know about that. Well, Bikewise is a great place to go to learn about this. Now, right now you're going to find a lot of reports for the Seattle area, considering the fact that this was founded by the Cascade Bicycle Club. But hopefully more and more of you will use it to report things in your own area. As a matter of fact, I was able to find something in Utah. Nothing in Salt Lake or nothing in Park City, but hopefully, those of you who are Utahns and cyclists will start using the website as well. I think it's a great thing that they've started. I hope that more of you will begin to use it. Go ahead and check it out. It's at www.bikewise.org. And congratulations to the Cascade Bike Club and Phil Mitchell for putting this together as a service for their fellow cyclists. Before we wrap up the show, I do want to thank our sponsor, Graham Street and Cyclo Club. Don't forget about their new 7-day training module, Get Faster in 7 Days. Very well priced and a great way to learn more about Graham Street and sample some of the things that Cyclo Club members get. And of course, for those of you who are Cyclo Club members, I believe you're going to get this module for free. Go check it out, www.thefredcast.com. You'll find the link on the right-hand side of the page. I also want to remind you, it's time to sign up for our French Alps trip, September 5th through the 12th. Again, www.thefredcast.com, and click that travel link at the top of the page. And then finally, one last reminder for those of you who are interested, we couldn't do the Fredcast without your donations. Please go to thefredcast.com and click that donate link. We appreciate all of you for your support of the Fredcast. Well, that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. I want to thank all of you for joining me for yet another episode and for staying subscribed, and also for telling your friends and your riding partners and your friends that are in your club and your local bike shop about the Fredcast. Of course, they can find information just like you can on our website at www.thefredcast.com. And of course, perhaps the best way to stay in contact with everything that's going on here at Fredcast World Headquarters is to follow us on Twitter. The Twitter name is simply Fredcast, or go to twitter.com/Fredcast to sign up. Of course, you can send us an email anytime. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or call our Fredcast listener hotline via Skype. The name is The Fredcast, or with your regular analog phone at 435-258-6FRED. That's area code 435-258-6373. And now it's time for PodSafe Cycling Music. Music that comes from independent artists, that is capable of being played on podcasts, that goes along great with cycling. Tonight's music comes to us, as it does frequently, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.com. www.podshow.com. Tonight's music is called What to Do with Michael. It's by the Candy Butchers, and you'll find links in the show notes and in the Enhanced Podcast to where you can find their website, where you can find them on Podshow, and of course, where you can find them on iTunes. Hope you've enjoyed this week's show. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Fredcast. Until then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Right, he just needed time.